I actually, when I hear of a company that is purpose washing, woke washing, whatever you want to call it, ESG washing, I almost laugh. I'm like, knock yourself out. Because if consumers don't call them out or investors don't call them out, sure as hell their employees will call them out.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
I've followed today's guest for years. Not in a scary stalkerish way, I just have a lot of respect for the guy, so much so that I quoted him in my first book, Going Social, about 8 years ago. Simon Mannering is the founder and CEO of WeFirst, a strategic consultancy that turns companies into movements by empowering their brands to lead with a purpose larger than themselves. He's also the author of Lead With We, The Business Revolution That'll Save Our Future, which came out yesterday. Lead With We shows how all of us, from the CEOs of the biggest corporations to exciting entrepreneurs to the everyday consumer, can make more environmentally friendly, purpose-driven, and positively impactful choices in service of everybody's future. I talked to Simon about how consumers can help businesses be more accountable to make better decisions in general, specific ways companies can not only do less harm but more good, and why sustainability is at such a critical juncture right now. I think you'll learn a lot from Simon in this episode, so let's jump right in. So, Simon, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to be with you. I have to ask you first and foremost, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
I'm Simon Mannering. I'm the CEO and founder of a strategic consultancy called WeFirst, based here in Los Angeles, and we help purpose-driven brands accelerate their growth and impact.
And that's nice, sweet, short, and to the point. I got to tell you, I feel like I know you. I sort of know you from ages back. I quoted you in my first book 8 years ago. I know this name. Where do I know this name from?
It's funny. It's like, the misguided things we do in our youth. You quoted me. I appreciate that. No, thank you. And it is funny how we all sort of, this connective tissue between folks who are putting some thinking out there. It's really nice. It's sort of, it's comforting because I think the author experience is a little bit lonely at times, and it's nice to know that we're all connected in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you've written other things, but Lead With We is the new one, The Business Revolution That Will Save Our Future, which I think is one of the better, more compelling subtitles I've seen lately. And I was just, curious what inspired you to write the book, because knowing from experience, how much of a labor of love these things sometimes are, to put yourself through that process again. Kudos to you.
It is, second time round, it just proves that you probably are misguided in your judgment. But no, I here's why I wrote the book. In 2008, 2009, we had a global economic meltdown, and it really affected so many people's lives. But at the same time, social media was just rising. There was Facebook and Twitter and these things, and Arab Spring was happening. And my first book was really focused on, okay, how do we plus business as usual by leveraging social technologies to really have healthy dialogues between brands and consumers and institutions and citizens so that we can do more good. And I think, a lot of good has been done on top of business as usual, but a lot of those platforms have been used really, in service of advertising dollars and so on and so on. And it didn't probably deliver on the full promise that it had. But above and beyond that, in the last 10 years, it's a whole different situation. The issues that I've been passionate about solving for, whether it's the climate crisis, whether it's loss of biodiversity, species around the world, whether it's pollution in the ocean and all the social challenges that fall out of that, these have got much worse. And so while the first book was like, how do we improve business as usual by doing more good through social technologies, this new book is a complete reimagining and reengineering of business based on the idea of collaborative leadership, which is a lofty way of saying, how do we live and work together in new ways that restore and protect the natural and living systems on which all of our futures depend? And why is that important? Well, I think, you'd have to be kind of living alone on a distant hill not to be aware of all the challenges we face. Climate, and the extreme weather that's coming out of it, and the plastics in the ocean, and the Black Lives Matter movement, and social inequities during COVID-19. And so we're all sitting here worried, anxious, not only for our own well-being, but for our future. And my big preoccupation, Jeremy, really is we're not doing enough fast enough. So how do we accelerate and scale our response to these challenges we face? And importantly, how do we do it in a way that drives business growth and we recast these challenges as marketplace opportunities to be solved for, so that we can at once, you know, keep business thriving while also restore these systems that make life possible. And that's what Lead with We is all about.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really great way of framing it. It seems to me that, you know, the COVID especially has shone a light, on my grammar is never my strong suit. I think that there's, you know, just all of this inequity in the world that a lot of people were paying attention to some extent, but certainly more people are paying attention to now. And, you know, I'm wondering what you think, you know, what is a corporation's role in solving for all of that?
It's a great question. And here's the thing that I struggle with, and I want everybody listening to ask themselves too, just some really, really basic questions. It's not rocket science, any of this. I mean, you know, are we in trouble? Do we think we're in trouble? And I think, you know, we'd all agree we are on several fronts. And then secondly, is what we're doing to fix it enough? And I don't think it is, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it. And then thirdly, who's best equipped to resolve these issues, to do less bad and more good more quickly? And I think that's business, because they have the reach, the resources, the expertise, the bricks and mortar kind of supply chains all around the world and stores and so on. And then, okay, if business is really, you know, front and center, on the front line, what do they need to be doing differently, because we're not getting there fast enough? And so I really look at it and say, well, these large legacy corporations can not only do less bad in terms of cleaning up their supply chain and treating their employees better and going to market more responsibly, but they can actually reimagine themselves and what they make and how they take it to market to solve for these issues. And I've always felt that business is the elephant in the room. You know, I used to be a writer on the Nike brand at their ad agency, Wieden & Kennedy, and then I was worldwide creative director on Motorola and helped launch the Razr phone. And you get a sense when you do that work of how powerful communications can be in driving change. And now we're in this moment of crisis, and I sit there and I go, why aren't we leveraging the power of business and these communication tools to move us in the right direction? And that's why corporations are really front and center.
Yeah, I think, you know, building on that, it seems to me that there are some people in corporate America that will do the right thing because it's the right thing. And there are some people who will do something because you can show them that doing the right thing will make them a dollar, you know, make them into some incremental revenue going into their coffers in the years to come. You know, a perfect example would be marketing to underserved demographics. If you could convince them to do that because they're going to sell more, then they'll do it, not necessarily because it provides better access to people who deserve it. So I'm wondering, given that, I mean, what's your approach to winning people over to essentially doing the right thing, you know, irrespective of the reasons that they might be doing it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you know, firstly, let's draw a distinction. Human beings have a healthy self-interest. They do want to look after themselves first in some ways, in terms of their health and well-being and providing for their family. That's healthy self-interest. What I'm talking about is really overcoming selfishness, which is really about, you know, serving yourself at the cost of others. So with that distinction in mind, I think all of us can't avoid a very clear-eyed view of the reality that we now find ourselves living in. I mean, if you look at the last, you know, 18 months between COVID and the climate crisis and the Black Lives Matter movement, we find ourselves facing multiple challenges at once. And I think, A, that's made us all concerned. I mean, I really think that I hear across the board, and you're seeing all the research out there, that from CEOs to employees through to citizens all around the world, and especially young people, we're very worried about our daily life and about the future. But that then begs the question, who's responsible for fixing it? And I think to a large degree in the past, we thought government would, or NGOs, foundations, nonprofits, or there might be the odd billionaire out there who's doing something, or one company that's doing good, you know, the Unilevers or Patagonias of the world. But I think increasingly people have realized that we're all on the hook, and that we are complicit in the problem, both because of the actions or choices we make, if we throw a piece of plastic in the street, but also our inaction by waiting for somebody else. And so to come back to your question, why would we show up? How do we motivate people? I think, A, we're all very much aware of the scale of the challenges we face. And also, B, I think that there is an innate goodness in human beings that is really a yearning to come out. We want to find meaning in our work. We want to be more connected to each other. We want to be more connected to the natural world, which gives us so much joy and renewal. And, you know, I don't think that we are as polarized and as divisive as we see so much in the media and we see around the country here in the US right now. And I think so, a combination of our innate goodness and our desire to be connected to each other on the planet, a heightened awareness of the urgency of the crises we face, and a growing recognition that each one of us are either going to be part of the problem or part of the solution. I think all of those reasons create the conditions where if a brand, whatever it is, whoever you want to buy from, whoever you work for, if a brand creates an opportunity to contribute in a way that aligns with what you care about, I think people are predisposed to show up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a reasonable thought. I think that the other challenge, and this is something I've spoken to a few people about, is the long-term versus the short-term, right? Because there are sometimes very pressing short-term issues that I feel like will naturally get a headline. And then there are these very long-term issues, or, you know, like we're talking 50-year issues. And because of that, I mean, climate change is a really good example. What gets covered more, you know, the current wildfire, which is a short-term problem, or climate change writ large, which is a, you know, larger problem. And I'm wondering, is that just something where we're wired to not necessarily handle those long-term problems well because our minds can't necessarily wrap our heads around it? And if so, how do you get corporations to understand that that's something that needs to be focused on the long-term as well as the short?
I do. I think that perspective issue is a huge one. And from a couple of perspectives. One, I think that, you know, when we're in a crisis, horizon lines tend to contract. We start to worry about tomorrow and the next day and are we going to be okay, as opposed to what things need to look like in a year, 3 years or 5 years. We're more in survival mode. So that does tend to work against us. But often people frame kind of a response to that sort of question in terms of, hey, we've got to suspend short-termism, like just worrying about the next quarter and our profits, and really lean into long-termism, which is really about, hey, let's create solutions and take actions that serve our well-being over the long term. I actually want to sort of layer on that in a different way, which is a lot of these questions are framed in terms of punishment or being punitive. What do you have to stop doing? What do you have to pull back? And it can often sound like, what money do you not have to make because we've got to fix the world? But the reality is this, the things that we're doing right now, whether you're a founder of a small company or a large corporation, there's almost no company that is doing all right all the time. And those actions are costing us things that are far more valuable than money. For example, security in terms of the climate, the tragic loss of species all around the world, that biodiversity that makes medicine and our lives and the natural world so amazing. Ocean acidification, there's going to be more plastic by weight than fish in the ocean by 2050, and so on and so on and so on. So with that in mind, I'd love to flip my response and say, because we're now at a time where the market drivers are rewarding businesses that are showing up in positive and meaningful ways, you can benefit both in the short term and the long term by being increasingly purposeful. And so I would rather say to corporations, increasingly, your employees, citizens, suppliers, customers, they want to work for, buy from, and invest in companies that are solving for the issues that are compromising our future. And so the more you lean into your purpose, you define it, you integrate it, you activate it, you will tap into those market forces that will drive your growth in the short term. And at the same time, the more you lean into that long-term perspective of these positive and impactful solutions, the more you'll be on the right side of history, the more you'll benefit from the momentum behind those behaviors. And what you're starting to see, whether it's massive energy companies like Ørsted go from being oil and gas to being the leading alternative energy company in the world, whether it's the clean beauty movement, whether it's the clean food movement, whether it's the clean apparel movement, whether it's plant-based alternatives like Beyond Meat or Impossible Foods, what you're seeing is that the market forces are growing and building momentum behind those companies that see these challenges as solutions waiting to be taken to market. And so I think we should take a short-term and a long-term perspective that builds on purpose, and your business will be rewarded for doing so.
Yeah, and I think that I'm glad that you mentioned the idea of, you know, being on the right side of history, because I think that this is something that, again, it's, I feel like it's probably a balancing act, but I'm wondering if companies should lead by picking causes themselves that they feel strongly and are kind of embedded in their DNA, or should they be listening to their consumers and essentially glom onto whatever the consumer cares about? And I mean, I see virtues to both of those approaches, provided you don't do it in a very cynical Me Too kind of way, but if you legitimately get behind the cause. But what's the best way to tackle that?
It's a really important question. And for those listening, you know, for 10 years, my company has been working with very large enterprises around the world and also very small startups and solopreneurs that are all purposeful who face this question all the time. And there's two different components to it. One is, even from a product point of view, do you make the product that you want to make, or do you kind of reverse engineer out of the consumer and what they want? And increasingly, my answer, based on the experience of the brands that I've worked on, is really you can't let the tail wag the dog. You know, more and more brands, consumers will reward brands for their self-assuredness in the sense that they've defined what their purpose is and they're showing up as a company with products in ways that are social proof of that higher order commitment that's bigger than the company or the product itself. And so, you know, when it comes to who listens to who, on 20, 30 years of experience in doing this sort of work, it's very important to start with yourself, but there's an important distinction. You are a company going to market with products, but instead of talking about yourself, talking about your products, talking about the good they're doing, you need to be the chief celebrant rather than celebrity of your stakeholder community. What do I mean? Too often, even purposeful brands get this wrong. They go to market, they put really important money and resources and capital and time into doing good. But then they go and communicate about it and say, hey, look at the hours our employees volunteer. Look how good our product is. Look at our give back. Look at this. Look at that. And effectively, what the audience, the consumer, the customer hears is just someone talking about themselves. And, you know, if you look at all the research, consumer research, you know, you really do see that people distrust marketing. They don't want to be sold to and so on and so on. And people shut down. And then if you're a business owner, you're sitting there going, I'm doing all this work on content and social media. Why am I getting a result? Why don't I get any engagement? When you're the celebrant, you get off yourself and you celebrate your employees. You celebrate your suppliers. You celebrate your customers. You celebrate the co-creative opportunities that you've manifested where everyone can make a difference together through the give back or whatever else it might be. And so it's just a shifting come from. You know, I think about it this way. If you ever walk into a party and you meet somebody, and all they do is talk about themselves and how much money they get through philanthropy and the hours they volunteered, you'll probably be like, yeah, great guy, but like enough about you, enough. But if someone comes out and says, listen, what are you interested in? What do you care about? Oh, that's fascinating because, you know, there's this organization that does this, or there's this company with employees who are doing this, and what they did together, it's just a totally different way of sharing the same information. And so as long as you're the celebrant, not celebrity, then you can communicate the good work you're doing in ways that will build your business. And you'll create content and engagement that people amplify and advocate for rather than just saying, oh, just stop talking about yourself.
Well, in some ways, yeah, it actually seems there's one thing that I know that, you know, you talk a lot about sustainability. And I think one thing that is interesting to me is the subject of greenwashing, right? Where there are a lot of brands that try to show that they're environmentally friendly when they're not actually, or they're not necessarily walking the walk, and they're more so focused on the optics. And to me, it almost seems like unless there are a few brands that get in significant trouble or shamed, I don't want to say that people should be shamed just for, you know, heck's sake, but it does seem to me that unless there's some drawback to doing and engaging in that type of behavior, brands will be led to do things and, you know, try to look like they're doing more than they are and focusing on the optics rather than, you know, what they're doing behind the scenes.
You know, it's a real concern. And, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book, you know, Lead With We, is to just lay out how brands, large and small, navigate all of this. Because here's the reality, and you pointed this out, brands face multiple crises now. And that's really hard to get your head around. At the same time, you know, you're going to get exposed for cause washing, purpose washing, local washing, green washing, woke washing, and on it goes. And so I actually, when I hear of a company that is purpose washing, woke washing, whatever you want to call it, ESG washing, I almost laugh. I'm like, knock yourself out. Because if consumers don't call them out or investors don't call them out, sure as hell their employees will call them out. Just look at, you know, the actions taken by employees at Facebook and at Google and at Amazon over climate and pay scales and women's empowerment in recent times. I mean, brands would be in denial if they didn't recognize that employees are very activists by nature as well. And so it's a high bar of expectation in the sense that there are multiple crises to respond to, and you're going to get called out by your own internal stakeholders if you're not careful. But I want to answer one other part of your question, which was really important. How do you know when to show up? What issue? And, you know, and a lot of the folks that we talk to and work with, they're sort of like, okay, you know, there's all of these issues going on. Do we show up for everything? What's authentic to us? What's not authentic? I mean, my social team doesn't know what to do. What do we say in our marketing?
Right, because I was going to say, I think that if you show up for everything, then if you, what's the saying? If you stand for everything, you stand for nothing. And, yeah. And to me, people might not pay as much attention then.
Exactly. And here's the solution. The solution is there are three table stakes for being in business today. One is sustainability or ESG, environmental social governance metrics, which is basically your way of demonstrating that your supply chain and how you show up inside your company and how you run your company is responsible to all stakeholders, including the planet. And that's really sustainability and ESG. The second is D&I, diversity and inclusion, or it might be DINE, or it could be JEDI, which has justice in there as well, and equity. You know, all of those speak to this systemic, long-standing problem where even if there is diversity, there's not true inclusion inside organizations. And you need to look at your hiring practices, your pay scales, your executive compensation, all of these different things to make sure that you're delivering on the D&I side. Thirdly is a fair and living wage. You know, in the restaurant industry, for the first time in the US, they just broke $15 an hour. And you see this competition now for line workers inside companies like Amazon and others to really, you know, up the pay to get the talent they need. You've got to deliver on those three fronts: sustainability, D&I, fair and living wage, just to be in business. That's your social license to operate. Above and beyond that, you should only lean into issues that are authentic and relevant to your brand, or if you are going to participate in an issue, do it in a way that's relevant to your brand. And I'll give you an example so it doesn't sound like theory. When, you know, all the way through COVID, it's taken such a mental toll on everybody, and we're all just barely keeping it together. And for some of us, it's been too much, and it's just a really hard time. You've got a company like Harry's, the razor subscription company, that, like many others, could have responded by making PPE equipment or, you know, ventilators or making meals for medical practitioners or first responders. But instead, they thought, who is our core audience? And our core audience is young men. And young men have a disproportionate amount of suicide anyway. And that's got worse during COVID due to loss of jobs and future and hopes and so on. So they leaned into doing a program with the Crisis Text Line to help young men deal with their mental health, which is often a taboo topic because I know as a man, we're always pretending we've got it together, but behind the scenes, we're barely keeping it together. And so for them, it wasn't about leaning into PPE equipment as much as it was about talking to their core audience, young men, about their mental health, which was relevant to their brand and their product.
Sorry, yeah, no, I got me thinking about when you were talking about DEI initiatives. I think, you know, going back to that for a second, one of the critical things that strikes me about that, about why that's important, is, again, from almost a purely cynical sense, which I'm not, but, you know, if you're going to be purely pragmatic, it seems reasonable to look to see, you know, what population growth looks like and what types of groups are more likely to be consuming your product in the future, and reach out to those people now and try to include them now, just because it's going to be good for your bottom line 10 years from now. And again, that's not the way that I think. It's just the way that I see you're able to convince some people to do the right thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's cynical at all. I think it's just smart business. You've got to be strategic. And I think what you're talking about is something that I deeply believe, which is if you're a business owner listening to this podcast, if you're a CEO or part of a C-suite in marketing, HR, instead of building on the past, you've got to reverse engineer out of the future. Why? The present has less to do with the past than ever, because things are changing so quickly every day. Just think about how the world's changed in the last 18 months. And now think about how quickly it's going to change with all of these issues like climate and so on. Instead, you're far better served by looking out to the future and saying, where is the world? Where's my market? Where's my industry going to be in 3 to 5 years? And then reverse engineer out of that and go, okay, based on that reality and the role we want to play in that world, what do we need to do to achieve that in 4 years' time, 3 years' time, 2 years' time, and in the next 6 months? And so I do think you've got to position your brand with this sort of roadmap, rollout plan for how to meet the challenges that are coming towards us and then capture those market forces that are going to be unlocked by it. And here's my opinion of the future. All of these issues, climate crisis, biodiversity, ocean acidification, all of these things that are going to inform our lives on a daily basis, what we eat, where we can go, how we feel, are compounding in the future and they're hurtling back towards us in the present. And what it's going to do is going to create this hockey stick of expectation on brands. And right now, we've almost got this luxury of how far or how fast we change. And we go, well, should we be more responsible in our supply chain? Maybe we shouldn't make that product, or maybe we should make a different type of product. What do you think, everyone? That luxury is going to be ripped from our hands as people's daily experience of life gets more acute in ways that we've seen in the last 18 months. And increasingly, people are going to look at your brand and say, are you part of the problem or are you part of the solution? And so what I've wanted to do in the book is to really lay out, here's what that reality is going to look like. Here's how you position yourself to respond appropriately, to leverage the market forces, to take advantage of it, yes, so your business can grow, but grow by solving for those issues, those social and environmental challenges. And I think that if you just ask yourself, if you're listening, how is the world different in the business world to 18 months ago? Just think about exponentially. Everyone stopped what they're doing. They send everyone home. You know, business has been turned on its head. Imagine as we continue and these other issues I've mentioned get more, more serious and more consequential in our lives, how we're going to continue to change. We have to prepare for this acceleration of a very dynamic, fluid marketplace. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book was to help people understand what is that going to look like and what they do about it.
Well, I think it's, obviously a fantastic subject and something that is going to be really applicable to quite a number of people out there. So I'm really thankful that you wrote it and that you took the time to talk to us. So Simon, yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. I mean, I think the key to the whole thesis of what I've written about in Lead With We is that we need to do this together. In the same way that we're in this mess because of all the individual actions all across the world over decades, you know, that came together and created this situation. We need to use that connectivity in a positive way so that we can compound and accelerate the solutions to these issues. Why? So that we can all have a better future. Why? Because brands can't survive in societies that fail. And there are going to be those companies that recognize these challenges as innovation opportunities and use this roadmap to kind of apply themselves in new ways. And they're going to thrive in these conditions while others will fall by the wayside. So, Jeremy, I really appreciate you kind of exploring the book with me and just really thank you to your listeners for being interested.
Thanks again to Simon for making the time. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.